sit home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please telephone. Don't be cruel.
Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week magazine, The Independent, New York Times, Rolling Stone, BGO Records, and Entertainment Weekly.
Don't make me feel this way. Come on over here and love me. You know what I want you to say. Don't be cruel.
This opening number, Don't Be Cruel, is brought to us by Elvis. We'll be hearing more from and about Elvis later on in today's program, and he will close out today's program as well. But first, these trivia questions.
Then you'll know you'll have me, and I know that I'll have you. Don't be cruel to who heart is true.
Today's trivia questions are brought to us once again by www.squidoo.com. Question number one, what was Elvis's favorite sandwich? Big hint here, it's fried. Second question, what was Elvis's first gold record? Big hint here.
The bailoff's tears keep flowing, the desk clerk's dressed in black. Well, they've been so long on the lonely street, they'll never, never look back and think of something. Think it's a lonely baby, well, it's a lonely.
What's the name of that song? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Transition section of today's program is brought to us once again by BGORecords.com, today in rock history. And today is the weekend of September 3rd through the 5th. What were the number one hits this weekend? Well, back in 1955, you may remember, it was Mitch Miller with the Yellow Rose of Texas at number one. And this weekend, back in 1964, it was the Animals with House of the Rising Sun. 45 years ago this weekend, it was the Beatles with Help. And back in 1966, a year later, it was Donovan, Sunshine Superman. Back in 1971 this weekend, it was Paul and Linda McCartney, Uncle Albert, Admiral Halsey. And back in 1976 this weekend, it was ABBA, Dancing Queen. 33 years ago this weekend, it was Elvis Presley with Way Down. And back in 1982, Steve Miller, Abracadabra. And 27 years ago this weekend, it was the Eurythmics with Sweet Dreams Are Made of This. Now, if you're born on September 3rd, you share a birthday with Al Jardine. He was born on that day, September 3rd, 1942. He's with the Beach Boys, of course. And George Biondo from Steppenwolf, he was born on that day back in 1945. Deaths on September 3rd include 1967, Woody Guthrie, This Land Is Your Land. In 1970, Al, Blind Al Wilson from Canned Heat, died on September 3rd. If you're born on September 4th, you share a birthday with Merrill Knight of Gladys Knight and the Pips, born on that day in 1942, and Gene Parsons, born on that day back in 1945, from the Byrds. If you're born on September 5th, you share a birthday with Al Stewart, Year of the Cat, 1945, and Loudon Wainwright III, 1946, on September 5th. And Freddie Mercury of Queen, he was born on September 5th, 1946. And finally, Dweezil Zappa, born on September 5th, 1969. Miscellany in rock history this weekend. Well, 52 years ago this weekend, Duane Eddy debuted on the charts with Rebel Rouser. And back in 1962, it was the Beatles taking 17 takes to get it right. Record Love Me Do at EMI Studio No. 2 in St. John's Wood. George Martin produces. Asked by George Martin if everything is okay, George Harrison replies, "No, I don't like your tie." Back in 1964 this weekend, the Supremes debuted on the charts with Where Did Our Love Go? And back in 1964 this weekend, Indonesian government bans Beatles-style haircuts. Back in 1965, The Who have their van stolen after leaving it parked outside Battersea Dog's home while they go in to buy a guard dog. They get the van back, but they lose 5,000 pounds worth of equipment. It was 44 years ago this weekend that the Hollies debuted on the U.S. chart with Bus Stop. And back in 1968 this weekend, the Rolling Stones' current single, Street Fighting Man, is banned in Chicago and other U.S. cities. Back in 1982 this weekend, The Police, The Cars, The B-52s, and Tom Petty are among the acts featured at a three-day U.S. music festival at San Bernardino, California. Just under 500,000 people attend. Back in 1990 this weekend, it was B.B. King receiving a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Back in 1991 this weekend, R.E.M. receives 5 MTV Video Music Awards, including Video of the Year for Losing My Religion. And 14 years ago, the Beatles Anthology videotape set is released. This next article is brought to us by Dave White, published on the 25th of July, 2010, classicrock.about.com. Guitar heavies to pay tribute to Frank Zappa. Dweezil Zappa, who is celebrating his 41st birthday this weekend, as announced earlier in this program, his latest tribute to his late father will be an album titled What the Hell Was I Thinking? Featured players include Eddie Van Halen, Queen's Brian May, Angus and Malcolm Young, AC/DC, and Rat's Warren DeMartini. Release date for the Frank Zappa tribute hasn't been announced yet. In local rock news, we see this story published in the MidtownRaleighNews.com. Published on August 22, 2010. Family to host charity concert. This is by Chelsea Kellner. Raleigh. It's not every family has both the acreage and the amphitheater to host a 3-band charity concert in their own backyard. So when Mark Boone's daughter, Julianne, decided she wanted to raise money for digging wells in Africa, how to do it was a no-brainer. We built the amphitheater 10 years ago when my niece said she wanted to get married in the backyard, Mark Boone said. We have a lot of extra room. The Boone family hosted 3 bands and a blues guitarist in their 7-acre backyard off Ebenezer Church Road in North Raleigh, free and open to the public with room for between 200 and 500 guests. The event was held on the 22nd of August, 2010. Carl Moraski and the Band of Brothers are headlining, playing a mix of 60s and 70s rock, Boone said. Bluegrass band Nixon, Blevins, and Gage, a band from NC State University called Carolina Roadkill, and blues guitarist Heath Tuttle are the event's other performers, Boone said. The event is the brainchild of his daughter, Julianne Boone, 19, a junior at Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama. She was inspired after some college friends held a similar event to raise money for drilling wells in India. I was thinking if they can do it, I can totally do it, Julianne said. It's a physical need that is very real in Africa, and it's a need I feel we can meet, Julianne said. She also hopes the concert will serve to educate the attendees about the issue. It's so easy to just turn a blind eye about what's going on around the world when we haven't been there personally, Julianne said. At least this way they can be thinking of those people more, and maybe more willing to give or to go over there and help. This isn't the Boone Family Amphitheater's first charity event. A few years ago, the family hosted a bluegrass concert to raise money for the Raleigh Music Guild, Boone said. This next article comes to us from Parade magazine, published on the 18th of July, 2010, by Mitch Albom. Detroit native Sean Forbes didn't let being deaf stop him from a career in music. Finding his beat. In rap music, DEF is what you want to be. DEAF is another matter. Sean Forbes is both. As an infant, Sean lost nearly all his hearing. He grew up in suburban Detroit, the way many deaf children do. Special classes, sign language, constant tussles with kids making fun of him. But music, there was always music. At an early age, Sean made his mother play Mitch Ryder's Devil with the Blue Dress On over and over. He could feel the thumping drums that launched the song. She even taught him the opening words until he could sing along. Fee, fee, fi, fi, fo, fo, fum, he recalls now laughing. That, in a way, was his first rap. Although it's impossible for Sean to distinguish, say, soft violins or classical guitar, he can sense low and percussive tones, especially the bass and drum so prevalent in rap music. As he absorbed the beat, he says, I'd have a hearing friend point to the words.
Good gracious, asses bodacious, flirtatious, trying to show faces, looking for the right time to shoot my steam, looking for the right time to flash them G's. I'm leaving, please believe in me and the rest of my heathens. Check, I got a life at the top of the Four Seasons, penthouse, rooftop, birds, I'm leaving, no deceiving.
Eventually, Sean learned to play the drums and bass himself. He wrote lyrics and made videos in his basement. While attending a special college program at Rochester Institute of Technology, he was surprised one night with a guitar from his father. He played it so screamingly loud that the next day he was yanked into the school office. But his joy could not be contained. It is rare to meet a rapper as upbeat as Sean Forbes. His energy nearly explodes from his spiky hair and constant smile. You might think he would be withdrawn or self-pitying. You'd be wrong. Once, as a teenager, I was playing hockey, and this kid kept skating behind me, yelling, "Hey, deaf boy," until one of my teammates started a fight with him. I asked, "What's going on?" When they told me, I said, "Wow, someone is standing up for me?" And I figured I can do that, too. I mean, I'm going to be this way the rest of my life, so why not be positive about it? Today, Sean, 28, doesn't fight to prove himself. He records. He helped with DPAN, Deaf Professional Arts Network, which brings the same entertainment that hearing people enjoy to the deaf community, including signed video remakes of famous songs. Oh, and Sean laughs a lot. When you note how well he speaks, he says, "Yeah, I sound like a French guy, right?" When you ask him about what artist he can hear, he says, "Eminem is easy, but Whitney Houston is way over my head." When you ask him about the life of a deaf rapper, he recalls once running into a drugstore 5 minutes before he hit the stage because the batteries for my hearing aid were dead. Sean's songs are edged but positive. No killing. No disrespecting women. He's recently signed major recording and publishing deals and works with the same team that launched Eminem. He's performed all over the U.S., and his new release, fittingly titled I'm Deaf, is now out. I got deaf tones, but I ain't tone deaf. I'll stop stating the obvious, but I ain't done yet. In May, Sean did a concert back home in Detroit. The club was jammed. People roared. But because he couldn't hear the applause, he asked everyone to sway back and forth so he could witness the effect his music was having. What a moment. A child once made fun of, now leading a crowd swaying to his beat. Maybe DEF and DEAF really can be one and the same. After all, music isn't in the ears. It's in the soul. This next article is brought to us by Dave White from ClassicRock.About.com, published on the 25th of July, 2010, entitled, 2011 Tour for The Who? Maybe. The Who may be taking Quadrophenia on the road again next year. Roger Daltrey tells Billboard.com that a revised version of the 1973 rock opera is one possibility that's being discussed, along with Townsend's current work in progress, Floss. There's nothing certain yet. Townsend has chronic hearing problems, tinnitus, which required the use of a special stage monitor for The Who's Super Bowl halftime performance earlier this year.
We'll be right back. have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles.
So what do you know about today's featured artist, Elvis Presley? Well, we start out today with an actual interview with Elvis Presley that was done on October 28th, 1957. This last month, by the way, was the 33rd anniversary about Elvis's. That was August 16th was his death. They had an Elvis week and a pilgrimage, as usual, to Graceland. 40,000 people attended. Of course, there's all these myths about Elvis as well, that he's still alive and frequently spotted in, oh, stores, convenience stores, restaurants, and trailer parks all over the world. This interview was done by Dolores Diamond, associated editor of Elvis.com Australia. Once again, it was done on October 28, 1957, just after the general press conference, but backstage at the Pan Pacific and prior to Elvis's debut in Los Angeles. Elvis, calm and collected despite 9,000 screaming girls awaiting him out front, strolled in backstage, propped himself up on the table, and his legs dangling and swinging freely. Attired in a red jacket, a black shirt and pants, a yellow tie, and black shoes with a silver belt studded with rhinestone, he made a rather colorful figure, and a frank one, as you will see. Question. As the reputed king of rock and roll, how do you feel about the comments Frank Sinatra made railing rock and roll enthusiasts as nothing but a bunch of cretinous goons, and the music itself as the martial music of every sideburn delinquent on the face of the earth?
He has a right to his opinion, but I can't see him knocking it for no good reason. I wouldn't knock Frank Sinatra. I liked him very much. If I remember correctly, he was also a part of a trend, just like rock and roll. I think it's the greatest music ever naturally, because it's the only thing I can do. If I were a pop singer, I would prefer pop.
Well, what pop singers do you dig the most?
Well, I like Pat Boone, the Four Aces, the Ames Brothers, Dean Martin, Tommy Sands, and Ricky Nelson real well. I like classical music, too.
Well, now, some critics have openly accused you of inciting juvenile delinquency. How do you feel about this?
I don't understand it. Delinquency, to me, means robbing and knife fighting and things like that. I've done nothing to cause that, and I never set up a pattern like that for others to follow.
Do you think a lot about your fans?
I sure do. I always try to conduct my personal life to set a good example for them. I think about this all the time.
Elvis, is it true that you don't smoke or drink?
Yeah.
Financially, you're pretty well off, aren't you, even if you retired tomorrow?
I don't know exactly how much I make. It's over $1 million a year.
Well, if you don't keep up with your earnings in Variety or the trade magazines, what do you read?
I read Superman and Captain Marvel.
Well, what about news magazines or newspapers?
I don't have time to read.
Well, what sports do you go in for?
Well, I don't particularly like baseball. I like football and boxing. I played football myself once, and I enjoy watching the Pee Wee Leagues. As for fighting, I watch them on TV. My favorites are Sugar Ray Robinson and Rocky Marciano. I know Rocky very well. He was going to teach me how to fight, but I chickened out.
Would you like a role in films as a fighter?
You bet, a stinging, singing fighter. Actually, I'd like to do a straight dramatic show. I'm betting on an acting career.
What is your favorite song to date?
I wish you'd straighten something out right here. Many magazines have printed that I had 8 gold records, but I believe in giving a man credit for what he's done, and I've had 19 gold records.
What's your favorite?
My favorite is Don't Be Cruel.
Okay. Now, what about all the gyrations you go through when you sing?
I wasn't aware of what I was doing until people told me. I just sing like they do back home. When I was a youngster, I always liked spiritual quartets, and they sing like that.
Well, how do you feel when the girls scream for you?
Well, I figure it doesn't last, so I might as well enjoy it while I can.
Are you nervous at this moment?
I'm a little shaky. I go on stage, and then I relax after I start singing.
Do you ever forget your lyrics?
Sometimes, but who knows it? They can't tell what I'm singing anyway. I never rehearse. The band travels with me and knows all of my numbers. Of course, I have to rehearse for TV shows and for movies.
Elvis, do you read music?
No, I can't play the guitar either.
Well, what do you do with it if you don't play it?
I use it as a brace.
Well, your name is listed on the credits of several hit tunes as the author. How do you write music if you don't read it?
It's all a big hoax, honey. I never wrote a song in my life. I get one-third of the credit for recording it. It makes me look smarter than I am. I've never even had an idea for a song. Just once, maybe.
When was that?
I went to bed one night and had quite a dream and woke up all shook up. I phoned a friend and told him about it. By morning, he had a new song, all shook up.
Well, Elvis, do you think you'll ever return to school and further your education?
No, I don't see no point in studying. I don't think I need it. Do you? But there is one thing I'd like to do is be a good actor. I'm always striving to be natural in front of the camera. That takes studying of a sort.
It was time for the show, so we terminated the interview. Elvis Presley is quiet, courteous, and freer with his quips than expected. He's shrewd, so don't underestimate him. He'll be around for a long, long time. Incidentally, he's quite tall, much better looking than his photographs, with a clear complexion and dark blue eyes. He changed into his gold lamé jacket with sparkling lapels and went out to mesmerize the audience, all 9,000 of them. J.O. Williams, a longtime resident of Raleigh and Elvis aficionado, played the role of the voice of Elvis in that interview. The biography of Elvis Presley, published on March 27, 2010, by Rolling Stone, reads as follows. Elvis Presley was rock and roll's first real star, not to mention one of the most important cultural forces in history, a hip-shaking symbol of liberation for the state America of the 1950s. A white southerner singing blues laced with country and country laced with gospel, he brought together American music from both sides of the color line and performed it with a natural sexuality that made him a teen idol and role model for generations of cool rebels. He was repeatedly dismissed as vulgar, incompetent, and a bad influence, but the force of his music and his image was no mere merchandising feat. Presley signaled to mainstream culture that it was time to let go. 4 decades after his death, Presley's image and influence remain undiminished. While certainly other artists preceded him to the altar of rock and roll, he is indisputably the king. As a recording artist, Presley's accomplishments are unparalleled. He is believed to have sold more than 1 billion records worldwide, about 40% of those outside the U.S. And Presley still appears to hold the largest number of gold, platinum, and multi-platinum certifications of any artist in history. Born January 8, 1935, in East Tupelo, Mississippi, Presley was the son of Gladys and Vernon Presley, a sewing machine operator and a truck driver. Elvis's twin brother, Jesse Garon, was stillborn, and Elvis grew up as an only child. When he was 3, his father served an 8-month prison term for writing bad checks, and afterward Vernon Presley's employment was erratic, keeping the family just above poverty level. The Presleys attended the First Assembly of God Church, and its Pentecostal services always involved singing. In 1948, the family moved to Memphis, and while attending high school there, Presley spent much of his time hanging around the black section of town, especially on Beale Street, where bluesmen like B.B. King performed. Upon graduation in June 53, Presley worked at the Precision Tool Company, then drove a truck for Crown Electric. He planned to become a truck driver and had begun to wear his hair long, pompadoured, the current truck driver style. Presley became a national star in 1956, cut his first records with RCA, including Heartbreak Hotel.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lone Street, that Heartbreak Hotel.
By early 1957, he was the idol of millions of teens and the perfect target for the wrath of critics, teachers, clergy, and even other entertaining, including many country performers, all of whom saw his style as too suggestive. Presley repeatedly claimed not to understand what all the criticism was about. On January 6, 57, when Presley made the last of his three appearances on Ed Sullivan's show, he was shown only from the waist up. A series of other hits followed in 1957, including Jailhouse Rock.
Everybody knows
over Christmas 1960, Priscilla Ballou, the teenage daughter of an army officer whom Elvis met in Germany, visited Graceland. In early 1961, she moved in to live, it was said, under the supervision of Presley's father and stepmother.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you.
Toward the end of his life, however, his onstage presence began to deteriorate. He would babble incoherently and rip his pants, having grown quite obese, and on at least one occasion he collapsed. Despite his clearly worsening health, he maintained a frantic tour schedule. That was due to the fact that after 1973, Colonel Parker was earning nearly 50% of the commissions, as opposed to the industry standard of 10. Parker's need to satisfy personal gambling debts was said to be the reason for this self-serving deal. The result by the mid-70s was near-certain financial disaster. Presley's last live performance was on June 25, 1977, in Indianapolis. Although his death was at first attributed to congestive heart failure, later investigation revealed evidence that drug abuse may have been at least part of the cause of death. In 1986, Presley was among the first 10 performers inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, how'd you do on the trivia questions today? First question was, what was Elvis's favorite sandwich? I gave you a hint. It's fried. The answer is fried peanut butter and banana. No wonder he had heart problems. Second question, what was Elvis's first gold record? I gave you a big hint there by playing a snippet from it. That was, of course, Heartbreak Hotel.
Say, only fools rush in.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.
If I